This is a continuation of Art of Chanting. We're discussing Chapter 14, the Holy Name and Krishna's Form. And we're actually describing the different marks on the bottom of Nityananda Prabhu's feet. And our suggestion was given that in order to... The meditation technique here is that we chant the Holy Name and our mind is going here and there. Then we try to think of the feet of the Lord. I have these pictures here also. And you can look, and you can see all the conch shells under his, the big toe of his right foot. And of course there's a lot of marks on Nityananda's feet. There's 24 marks. Krishna's feet and Radharani's feet, there's only 19. So it's easier to memorize. But we suggested yesterday that to facilitate meditation, and I think I'll forego reading it because it's a little bit, to just read it is a little bit confusing. But our idea was that you record it, make a recording of it yourself, slowly, and then you can play it when you're chanting. You can record that and play it when you're chanting japa. You hear your own voice describing where the marks are. And it's told, Prabhupada tells that this is very powerful and purifying. It really good means to control the mind. And that is our practical experience also. That sometimes if our mind is not happily accepting the Holy Name, then we, while we're chanting, we close our eyes and we think of Krishna's feet, the color of the toenails, the blue on the top and the red on the bottom of his toenails. And I think of the bottom of his right foot. Because I have those symbols and memorized now. And Radharani, that's a little practice you do every day. You think, oh, okay, in my mind's eye, I'm seeing Krishna's right foot. And he has a barley corn and a chakra and an umbrella, an upcurving line. And, you know, these, and you can see, and because you memorize them. And while your mind is moving over Krishna's feet, then you're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And it takes some time, and it purifies the mind because we're meditating on Krishna's feet. And then, moreover, while we're meditating on the symbols on Krishna's feet, or Radharani's feet, or Nityananda's, or Lord Chaitanya's, we can think of the meanings, because the meanings are given here, especially the meanings of Radharani's symbols on Radharani's feet and Krishna's feet. There's a whole section of symbols. So when we meditate, for example, on Radharani's right foot and on Krishna's left foot, there's a conch shell under his big toe. So they both have conch shells, Radharani on her right foot and Krishna on his left foot. That means from the bottom, left, right. So this conch shell is a symbol of victory, proclaiming that those who take shelter of Radha Govinda's lotus feet are always saved from all distress and awarded with fearlessness. As the conch shell holds water for bathing the divine couple, or bathe, their lotus feet contain divine nectar that extinguishes the blazing fire of the material miseries of devotees. So this conch shell is for devotees. There are four symbols in the hands of Narayan, the shank, the padma, gada, and chakra. Two are for devotees. For the devotees, the conch and the lotus, the blessings, lotus flower, the conch shell. So we're chanting and we're thinking of Krishna's left foot, and the conch shell is there. And then we're thinking that it, we're, this meaning here, we take the meanings that are given in this book, then we make a prayer, oh conch shell on the bottom of Krishna's foot. You award fearlessness. May I always remember you. May I always remember you. And remember Krishna's feet. And remember the conch shell, which makes a nice sound. And the conch shell is auspicious. It drives away. The sound of the conch drives away ghosts and prates and all these things. So then we're chanting, we're thinking of it, and then we're saying, yes, this conch shell, it represents the divine nectar. This is divine nectar, the mercy of Radha and Krishna. And that nectar is pouring over my head from that conch shell. Just like the conch shells we pour on the heads of the deity. Sometimes devotees, first they pour the water on the lotus feet and then the head, but actually according to Shastra, you're supposed to bathe it from the top. Like devotees oftentimes now have a humble expression, they take the conch shell, they put on the feet. But just like when we bathe, when you go to take a shower, do you bathe your feet? they get covered. It runs from top down. So that's one point. So we can think that this conch shell that's on Radharani's feet and Krishna's feet, Radharani's right foot and Krishna's left, this has divine nectar of their mercy, Krunamayi Radharani, her mercy and Krishna's mercy. And this mercy is like rasa, is falling over my head, it's pouring over my head. And when that mercy contacts me, then I'm free from the material miseries. The fire is put out by rasa or water. So that water extinguishes. Then there's the flag. This is on Radharani's left foot. This is under her middle toe and Krishna's right foot. The flag announces security and protection from fear for devotees meditating on their feet. The flag on Radha's feet proclaims supreme victory for her sakis. So oftentimes there's some battle between Krishna and Radharani, and sometimes they have holy wars. It's not the Middle Ages in Europe where they had the Crusades, and they said these were holy wars. So holy means the throwing colors. So there was like a war, something like a war. We were throwing bombs and flower bombs and powder bombs and water bombs. In the Mahabharata, there was water weapons and there was air weapons and fire weapons, and powder weapons. So sometimes the gopis and the cowherd boys, they fight and they throw all kinds of flowers and colors and squirt each other. So Radharani, on her foot, she has this flag. And flag represents, it's proclaiming victory of her team over Krishna's team. That they always, usually whenever there's competition, Radharani's gopis, they defeat Krishna. So Krishna is only Ajit when he's not with Radharani. If he's in front of anyone else, in front of any demon, he's invincible, he's unconquerable. No one can conquer Krishna. Ajit. But Radharani conquers him, and the gopis conquer him. So this flag on her foot is, the gopis remember that, and they say, yes, Jai Shri Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. This is a victory chant for the followers of Radharani, Jai Shri Radhe. That's told in Govinda Lilamrita, when gopis and Krishna are bathing in Radhakund, in Jalkeli, then they're splashing, they have the splashing water, Krishna. And only Krishna is all by himself. Krishna against all the gopis. And of course they defeat him. He gets water up his nose and his eyes, and then he crosses his hands and says, stop, stop, stop. And so then the gopis want to keep going, and then Radharani says, no, let's please spare him. Because his flower garland breaks off from the barrage of water. His hair becomes his top knot becomes loose, his hair hangs down, his kajal, his makeup is washed off, and he's in a bad straits. And they say, like we say in the West, if someone's wrestling with someone and they pin you, the superior, your opponent, if you want to stop the fight, you have to say, uncle, uncle. And then the guy's on top of you, whatever, and then he says, uncle, uncle. He says, okay. That means I surrender. So this conch shell is victory for Radharani's team. So when she's winning the Jalakeli, then all the mantris are on the shore of Radhakund, and they're all cheering, Jai Shri Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. And Krishna hears that, it's like, oh, I have to get back there. This is very bad. So then we meditate on that flag, and this is the flag, we say, Jaya Dwaj. So this is a victory, security, protection from fear. They meditate on Radharani's feet and Krishna's feet. And that flag, that symbol of that flag, which is on their feet, it means it's actually, just like some auspicious people, sometimes Brahmins or high-class people, they look at their fingerprints, where they all, in the very center of the finger, there's actually a chakra. So the same, like that's a little imprinting. So in Radharani's feet and Krishna's feet, all these marks are there. Charan Chinna. So when they walk, they can see a chakra, you can see these marks. Just like we have lines in our feet. Krishna has an Urdhva Rekha. Urdhva Rekha means an upcurving line. It goes from the middle of his foot and it goes like this and goes between his second and third toe. And that's very auspicious, an upcurving line. And that represents the lifeline. And the devotee meditates on that, they pulled out of the well of material existence. That is also described. So these meanings are very nice. So the first stage is to memorize the location of the marks. Then the second stage is to memorize the meaning of the marks. And then combining, you're meditating, you're chanting and meditating. This is lotus feet meditation. Rup Dhyan. And so when you're meditating, you're chanting the holy name very attentively, and then your mind, you're capturing Krishna's feet and meditating on the symbols and then the meaning. So then you really, because then with the meaning, then you make a prayer to the holy name, please bring this about. So the curving line, this means, or it signifies, that devotees who hold on or cling to the lotus feet of Radha Shyam, as if holding on to a lifeline, will be transported to the spiritual world. Golok Prapti Ki. This line indicates that the path to Radha Govinda is very direct, straight, and narrow, like a razor's edge. It also reveals that Radha Govinda's lotus feet can reach down to the lowest of fallen souls who take shelter of them and deliver them to the highest destination. Just like if you're wandering in a field in some farm area, and oftentimes they dig a well, sometimes for irrigation they dig a well and then make a well in the field. Kua, kua, kua. And then that well goes dry, or the water goes bad, or it turns salty. So that's an abandoned well. They don't draw water from there for irrigation or drinking purposes. And that maybe that field lies fallow for some time. It means no crops are growing, fallow. And weeds grow around the top of that, and it gets kind of covered over. And so you're out there playing with your brother, and you're running through this field. You're running, playing tag or whatever. You're running through the grass. Also, boom. Ah! And you go down 50 feet in the well. There's deep wells. And then you yell, help, help. No one can hear you. Because all the sound is trapped in the well, under the ground. You can actually practically be standing next to a well and not hear a person. So it's not recommended to fall in a well. But that analogy is the analogy of the material world. We've fallen into a deep, dark well. And we're not alone in the well. We have some friends. There's scorpions. There's scorpions in the well, biting us and stinging us. And there's cobras crawling around the well, waiting for us to surrender. So it's not a very good proposal. So this material existence is like a dark well, and the lifeline, these lotus feet of Radha Krishna, are like someone throws a rope into a well. Hey, what happened? I'll help you. They throw a rope down, and then you hold onto it, and a bunch of men or whatever, they pull you up out of the well and save you. Like rescue mission. Sometimes they show these rescue missions on television, the helicopter goes, and there's a boat, shipwrecked boat, and people are floating around, and some life raft, and they have no more food, and the helicopter, and they drop something wrong. Really? Must have seen. Everyone's seen. So this is their feet, the line on their feet. These feet, they can reach down to the lowest region, no matter how fallen we are, or how contaminated we are, or how deep down in the dark well of material existence we are, Radharani's feet and Krishna's feet can reach all the way down there, that line. That's a line of infinite mercy. Ananta Kripa Rekha, a line of infinite mercy can be drawn from there. You start from Radharani's feet and all the way across that universe. Across the entire universe, as Radharani's feet are dancing in Vrindavan, far, far beyond this universe, billions and zillions of miles away. But they can extend all the way down to our mind and dance in our mind if we think of that line, Ananta Kripa Rekha. So these marks are here, rather than just reading them all. You can read them in the book and try to memorize them. You can also speak these on a tape slowly. Hear a few times a tape and gradually remember it. And also there's some practical, that's reasonable and rational, the meanings of the lines, they make sense. In other words, the line, it's an upcurving line. It goes from the bottom of their feet up to the top, to the middle of their feet, to their toes. So it's considered upcurving. So this line is going up, and then these feet will take us up to the spiritual world. So this is rational, and it's easy to remember. And the line is very thin and very narrow. So the path to Radha Govinda, the line is like a rasta, it's like a bhakti marg. Bhakti marg, the path of devotion. It's very thin, it's very narrow, and it's direct, but it's direct, it's straight. Adosha, Adatastra, Sangha. Vajra Kriya, Narta Nivriti, Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti. It's a karma, systematic. It's straight path. It's the most powerful path. So we can meditate on those. And then there's a meditation called Sri Shamsundar Dhyan. It is not easy to hold the transcendental form of Sri Krishna in the mind. But by constant practice, one will be able to see Krishna within his mind whenever he chants Hare Krishna. Seeing Shyam within the mind will fill one with peace and remove all forms of anxieties and problems. So this seeing, of course, is not the same as Sakshat Darshan. And this is a mental, the seeing in the mind with effort, trying to remember a deity. Of course, this happens sometimes when a person sleeps. The mind is also awake when we're sleeping. The mind is actually the center of all activity and all experience. So even when our senses are apparently inert and our body is lying at rest in the bed, mind is seeing people, we're talking, we're having experiences. And it seems very real, the mind world, the mental world. And it is. And sometimes we get so involved with the mental world, with the dreams, we cry and we laugh. We become afraid. We perspire. All these bodily things happen even though we're sleeping. So when we meditate on Shyam or Govinda or Krishna, we would meditate, our object of meditation would be a painting or a deity, favorite deity. And we'll look at them, a picture of them or that painting, and then we'll close our eyes and practice meditating on their form. And then when one chants Hare Krishna, one practices, then you can see, almost like you have a remote control television. So in the same way, when one becomes practiced at seeing the form of his Ishtadevata in his mind, then when he chants, he can invoke that form and chant. As chant is rounds, so chant is japa as an offering to the form within his mind. Because there's singing for the Lord, dancing for the Lord, offering stutis and stotrams, prayers to the Lord, cooking for the Lord. There's so many activities in bhakti to give pleasure to the Lord. So the Lord can appear in eight different forms. One form is called the Manasamurti, the deity in the mind. This is a nectar of devotion. He also can appear in Daru, in wood, Daru Brahman, Jagannath, or in Ashtadhatu, eight different metals, or in gold, or let's say marble, or granite, different elements Krishna can manifest. So one of them is manasi, manasi, murti. If you had a murti outside, or an archavigraha, Sri Vigraha outside in your house, you would take flowers and offer them flowers. You would sit down, you would recite some stotrams. We might sit in front of them and sing kirtan for their pleasure. And you're aware that yes, Krishna's there in a deity form. Now I'm sitting in front of him, I'm playing kartals. And for 10 minutes I'm having a kirtan. My guru asked me to have kirtan every day in front of the Thakurji. 10 minutes. Why following? And so I'm trying to chant nicely for his pleasure, for Radha's pleasure. So that's very easy to understand it. That I'm acting, I'm doing some devotional service, the deity is there. Now this manasi, the deity that we see in our mind, is the same. And so now we're sitting in front of our mind, we're the observer of our mind, we're observing the deity in our mind, and we're offering something to the deity. We're offering mantra, Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, Smaranam Parasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam Dasyam, Sakyamam, and Vedanam, Nadara Bhakti, 9 months of devotion. So this practice is explained here, and it's the experience of the author, that when you see Shyam, the deity form, within your mind, then you'll be filled with peace and remove all forms of anxieties and problems. Because that's the cause of anxiety. The cause of problems is disconnection with Krishna. We're not remembering Krishna, we're not thinking of Krishna, we're not seeing Krishna, we're not serving Krishna. When we serve Krishna, there's no problem. But actually the fact is that everywhere there's tension, and everywhere there's problems. But when we start serving Krishna and chanting His name, then the anxieties, the problems, they go. Oftentimes that's the remedial measure that's given to devotees. If they're having difficulty, then they're advised to chant more. It's magic, Krishna's holy name. This is the medicine. Like sometimes you go to the doctor and he diagnoses, oh, you have this, you need this Tylenol, or you need this cold capsule or something. Your symptoms indicate the need for this. So devotees, if they have any difficulties or anxieties or problems, then the universal medicine, the generic medicine, is only one for all problems. It's a very small medical shop. Very small chemist shop. There's only one bottle in the whole shop. Excuse me, doctor, I have this problem. Wife problem. Husband problem. Boss problem. Money problem. Health problem. So many problems. And so, yes, yes, I have the medicine for you. Just take this one bottle. One bottle. What's this bottle? See, look. This is a bottle of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Yes, yes, it's very effective. Well, how do I use it? Well, just open it up. You open it up. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hey, that's nice. That's real, doctor, you've given me very nice medicine. I've only taken a little dose and I feel so happy. Yeah, take regularly throughout the day. Whenever these symptoms come, you open up, take a little bit. Okay, thanks a lot. So then he takes it home. Then his wife is yelling at him, you're not bringing enough money, is that? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram. Oh, that's nice. That's good. So this is the devotee's life. He removes all forms of anxieties and problems. Now Srila Prabhupada says in chapter 5, paragraph 1 of Renunciation Through Wisdom, RTW, when a person fixes his mind on the eternal exquisite form of Shyam Sundar, the blackish, beautiful Lord Krishna, all distress and anguish are vanquished. That's pretty poetic. Prabhupada is very good with English. Anguish are vanquished. In the initial stages, the attempt to fix the mind on Krishna may be unsuccessful. But with regulated practice, abhyas yoga, which means regulating, it becomes possible. So this is the assurance of your Paraguru, my Guru, Srila Prabhupada, that it will happen. It's okay, it's difficult, but it will happen. Education is also, getting a degree is not easy, it's also difficult. But it will happen if you apply yourself. And getting a job is difficult, but if you're lucky, you can get one. So, this is the thing, very nice, he's saying that in the beginning it will be difficult to meditate on the form of Krishna. But it will never happen if we never try. If we never try to meditate on the form of Krishna, then we'll never see the form of Krishna in our minds when we chant. When we chant, we'll just see Hare Krishna, oh, bills. I have so many bills to pay. Hare Krishna, I have so many payments to make. Hare Krishna. Then we'll see all these things. We won't see Krishna's form. We'll chant the holy name, we'll see our mother-in-law. What I want the listening audience to do now, present and not present, is to sit next to the recommended places to sit. First, sit on a proper asana, and sit in front of a Shalagram Shila, or the deity, or Tulsi, or your Gurudev, if you're that fortunate to be with your Gurudev, or advanced devotees, and chant the holy name. This is the best arrangement for chanting. Now this, as one becomes more familiar with the form of the Lord, then he can meditate in a very precise way on the form of the Lord as a means or technique to control his mind and fix his mind on Krishna. If his mind is not peacefully accepting Krishna's Namrup avatar, Namrup avatar means the Mahamantra himself. The Mahamantra is the Namrup avatar of the Lord. He's descended into our lives in this form. But if we're not able to fix our mind on that form because it's wandering here and there, then we continue to chant and then apply one of these different techniques. So this is a technique that to absorb one's mind in the beautiful form of Radha and Krishna. And these meditations are actually given by the great acharyas in our line, like Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Rupa Goswami and others. And this particular meditation is given in the ISKCON Deity Worship book, which is called Pancha Pradeep, which is available. So what I want everyone to do, this is like a type of hypnotism, Mahamantra hypnotism. And this can be done. You can have someone read this while you're chanting, or again, you can record this on a tape recorder and play it very slowly. But because it's a minute description of Krishna's form. And this is called, and the acharyas say one should do this dhyana. Actually, this is a whole section of one book for meditating on Krishna's form. But when we are worshipping the holy name, we're actually worshipping the form of Radha and Krishna. So we can meditate on their forms, which are not different from their holy names. So if you can close your eyes and not fall asleep, if you can't close your eyes, then keep them half closed, like Madhyam Bru, look at the tip of your nose or between your eyebrows. Keep them half closed, and then I will read this description, which you also can read on a tape and play it back while you're chanting. Sometimes we listen to Prabhupada's chanting japa, that's also very nice, the japa tape. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And this is, we can make our own tapes to listen to, like these sections, chanting, and then listen, and try to see. The idea is that we're chanting, moving the beads through our fingers and chanting the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And our eyes are peacefully closed, we're not straining our forehead or things squinting, we're just like relaxed. And in the center, between our eyebrows, we're trying to see this form of Radha and Shyam. And then we're listening to the description and we're trying to see the form of the Lord according to the part that's being described. So, let's start. Shyam Sundar shines like a brilliant dark blue sapphire, as deep black as lamp black, which is the soot on a kerosene lantern. He looks as dark as a mountain of monsoon clouds, yet he's as delicate as a blue lotus. A luminous peacock feather adorns Krishna's black curly hair, which is thick and glossy. On Shyam's head rest ornaments of parijat blossoms, attended eagerly by swarms of bees. And on his ears are fresh flowers hanging over his ears. On the middle of Govinda's forehead, which is surrounded by stray locks of hair, there shines vertical bright yellow tilak, which rises between his pair of long, creeper-like eyebrows. Giridhari's face shines like the radiant full moon of the autumn season, and his eyes are wide and moist like the petals of a lotus flower. Radharaman's mirror-like cheeks glitter with the rays of his jeweled, shark-shaped earrings, Makar Kundala. Shyam's beautiful nose points gracefully upward, and his tender smile, resembling the moon, a jasmine flower, or a mandara flower, illuminates his all-attractive form. In other words, when we're meditating, we're trying to see this beautiful, tender smile on Shyam's face within our mind. Around Shyam's conch-like neck hangs a string of coral flowers and young leaves, and from his shoulders to his feet extends a garland of kalparviksha flowers, and surrounded by intoxicated bees. On Krishna's broad chest rests a sparkling string of pearls, like a constellation of stars in the evening sky. The shining of Krishna's Kaustubha jewel hanging on his chest is like the sun in the sky. And there's also his distinguishing mark of Srivats, some hairs on his chest. Shyam's shoulders are high, well-formed, and his thick arms reach to his knees, and his stomach is slightly indented and raised, with a handsome deep navel at its center. Extending upward from Krishna's navel is a delicate line of black hair. Shyam is decorated with armlets, bracelets, necklaces, anklets, and a golden belt studded with jewels. Various designs are painted on different parts of his body. A yellow cloth encircles Madhava's waist. Shyam has beautiful thighs and knees, charming ankles and feet, more lustrous than polished turtle shells. Shyam's toenails shine like ruby mirrors, and his toes are like leaves with jewels on them. Mala meditation. I'm reading, you're chanting, eyes closed, meditating. These descriptions apply to the Manasamurti, the murti in the mind. And you see, he's always like this, and you're seeing this. So everyone's seeing Krishna in the mind. On Shyam's pink lotus hands and feet are the pleasing signs of the fish, elephant goad, Ankush, chakra, conch, flag, lotus, thunderbolt, and barleycorn. Shyam's body, which comprises the topmost element of beauty, conquers the attraction of Cupid. Sri Krishna is an ocean of unlimited bliss. From his flute, made perfect by association with his lotus face, arise transcendental ragas as he deftly and effortlessly moves his fingers over the holes. Hearing those ragas from Krishna's flute, all living entities become attracted and stunned, their hearts melting. Then he says, this is the Rupdhya, this is the deity worship. The attractive Braja Gopis, their waists marked with three lines, eagerly come to serve Shyam. They tried to see these gopis coming on either side of Krishna to serve him. The gopis are swaying with the weight of their broad, heavy hips, and their heads bow down beneath the piles of their abundant jet-black hair. The desired tree of their bodies, drenched with the nectar of Shyam's flute, sprout goosebumps like flowers blooming on a vine. The ocean of love in the gopis' hearts swells and expands under the influence of Nandanandan's moonbeam smile. The splashing water from those high waves of praying appears as drops of perspiration on the bodies of the gopis as they rush to meet their beloved. This is an amazing meditation. This is, goes on. This is in the deity worship book. ISKCON. This is, one should meditate like this before he worships the deities of Radha Krishna. This is what it's told there, Pancha Pradeep. From the long bow of Shyam's enchanting eyebrows, he shoots sharp glances at the gopis. The shower of his deadly arrows of love breaks the composure of the gopis. The gopis, however, try their best to suppress the painful trembling afflicting their bodies. They are very eager to drink the nectar of Krishna's incomparable form. So they return his glance by looking at him with bashful eyes as they continue to float on the waves of praying. Swarms of excited bumblebees surround the gopis, eager to drink the honey dripping from the flowers falling from the gopis' loosened tresses. Now this is a meditation. Just keep trying to now try to see Radharani in the mind. Srimati Radhika's eternal age is 14 years, 2 months, and 15 days. Deep within one's heart of hearts is the most charmingly beautiful place, Sri Vrindavan Dham. It is completely surrounded by the sparkling Yamuna. And at the yoga pit, at the base of a beautiful effulgent desire tree, Radha and Krishna are sitting there. Now, dear mind, listen to me. I want you to meditate on one member of the divine couple. One has a complexion as lustrous as a fresh rain cloud. Begin right now and remember, first and foremost, and for all eternity, Krishna's attractively sweet, gentle smile. Now contemplate, think about, the fascinating crown or mukut on Krishna's head, which is decorated with a beautiful peacock feather and strands of gunja berries, those little red and black berries. Visualize Shyam's wavy locks of glossy hair. Dwell upon his forehead, which is beautified with lovely, precise tilak. Imagine Hari's eyebrows, his eyes and nose. Picture Govinda's satin smooth cheeks in your mind's eye. Fix your attention on Govinda's two ears, reflecting the prismatic halo of his swinging jeweled earrings. Remember Krishna's gorgeous ruby red lips and his sweet, delightful flute. Think about his different facial expressions. remember Shyam's neck, which is marked with three lines. And remember his two soft, sloping shoulders. Remember Shyam's two arms, encircled with armlets, bracelets, and other nice, intricate decorations. Remember his lotus hands with his petal-like fingers, which are decorated with exotic rings engraved with his own holy name. One of Krishna's rings on his finger is gold, and it says Krishna. And he wears a ring like that. Remember Murari's chest adorned with a Kastuba gem, forest garlands, pearl necklace, and a locket bearing Radha's picture. So he has a necklace around, has a little oval-shaped part of the necklace, and has a door on it. You open the door and there's a painting of Radharani there. Very beautiful painting, and that sits right on Krishna's heart. So we're meditating on that. That locket with that picture of Radha resting on Krishna's heart. Remember the radiant aura from the line of Lakshmi, Srivats, which is upon his chest. Remember the exquisite charm of the short raised hairs extending from his navel to his chest. Remember Shyamsundar's slender waist bordered by the fascinating ornament on his hips, which resound with tiny tinkling bells. Remember the shimmering lightning yellow dhoti caressing Hari's handsome broad hips. Remember Krishna's enchantingly strong thighs and his graceful knees, his calves extending to his delightful ankles. Remember the pair of musical anklets above his ankles. Remember his lotus feet and his charmingly soft toes and toenails, which are colored translucent red and white blended tones. Remember the ruddy pinkish tint of Shyam's foot soles that extends up to his heels with a conspicuous novel radiance. Now it says, visualize one after another the auspicious marks on the sole of Krishna's right foot. And this is his big toe. Remember the barleycorn mark at the base of Shyam's big toe. Below that barleycorn is a chakra, and below it an umbrella. Remember the upward curving line extending from the middle of Krishna's sole to his big toe and index toe on his right foot. Remember the lotus flower below Krishna's middle toes and the flag below that. Remember the elephant goad, Ankush, which is below Krishna's toe, his tiny toe, small toe. And below that elephant goad, or Ankush, is a thunderbolt. Remember the heel of Krishna's foot underneath his foot, his right foot. There is an octagon, it's called Ashtakon, eight-sided figure. And in the four directions, in the north, south, east, and west, there are four swastikas surrounding that octagon. And between the swastikas, there are four jambu fruits. Oh, my dear mind, please dwell on these 11 marks on Sri Hari's right foot. Now meditate on the 8 auspicious marks on the sole of Shyam's left foot. Remember, this is his left foot, now you're looking at the bottom of his toes. Remember the conch shell beneath Shyam's big toe. Beneath his middle toes, there's two concentric circles. One inner circle and surrounded by an outer circle. That's below his middle toes of his feet on his left foot. Remember the danu, the unstrung bow, which is below the concentric circles. And directly below that is the mark of a cow's hoof print. Below that hoof print, in the middle of Krishna's foot, there is a triangle. That triangle on Krishna's left foot is surrounded by four kumbhas, water pods. Directly below that triangle is a crescent moon. It's like Shiva's moon, small moon. Finally, on Krishna's heel of his left foot, there is a fish. Now, think about the reddish saffron hue or color of Krishna's foot soles. Remember his toenails and their glowing luster of mixed translucent red and white. In other words, we went from his smile down to his feet, and now the meditation is taking us back. This is what's told in this one thing. Remember Govinda's soft reddish heels. Remember both his feet, nicely adorned with resounding ankle bells. Remember Shyam's lovely ankles, rounded calves, smooth knees, and beautiful thighs. Remember the lightning brilliant radiance of his dhoti, yellow dhoti. Remember the jeweled ornament full of little tinkling bells that graces Shyam's hips. Remember Shyam's slim waist, deep lotus navel, banyan leaf shaped belly, which is covered by an expanse of fine hairs. Remember his broad chest, decorated with kostuba and many long jewel necklaces and tulsi manjari garlands. Remember the left side of his chest is adorned with the mark of Sri Vats, which is the symbol of Lakshmi Devi. Remember the right side of his chest, which is embellished by some lines, line of silver hairs. It says a sign of Brahma. Remember his neck, which is marked with three lines. Remember Krishna's throat is the birthplace of a whole treasure house of lovely sounds. Remember Shyam's soft, raised shoulders extending out on both sides. Remember Madhav's fully blossomed arms decorated with different kinds of ornaments and armlets. Remember Krishna's elbows, which are endowed with a very special type of lustrous effulgence. Remember his two hands, which have unique bracelets and ornaments. Remember the auspicious lines of great fortune on his deeply reddish palms. Remember his fingers, which are ornamented with golden rings, and his fingernails, which appear to be row of moons. Then fix your attention on Krishna's lotus face, radiant with beautiful features like his dazzling teeth and his cherry red upper and lower lips, his wide lotus eyes, and his pair of glowing cheeks. Fix your mind on Shamsundar's fascinating nose. Meditate on his two curved eyebrows. Absorb yourself in picturing the tilak design painted with brilliant yellow paste on his forehead. Shyam's ears are decorated with makara kundala, which are dazzling and swinging to and fro. Center your attention on that swinging motion of Shyam's earrings. Contemplate Krishna's jet black hair full of innumerable naturally wavy curls. Picture in your mind's eye Shyam's most attractive crown, decorated with peacock feathers, red and white gunja berries, and intricately woven flower strands. And now, my dear mind, finally, I want you to focus all your conscious attention and fully absorb yourself in uninterrupted, concentrated meditation on the effulgent radiance emanating from Krishna's attractively sweet, gentle smile. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki. Radha has a bodily complexion which is so brilliant and golden that it puts to shame the luster of fresh streaks of lightning. She is a Kishori, a newly blossomed young village girl. Now, my dear mind, I want you to focus your attention on that radiance which is emanating from the blue cloth covering Radhika's head, chunari. That radiance emanating from that cloth. Concentrate and meditate on Radhika's attractively sweet, gentle smile. Next, visualize Radha's fine, naturally wavy hair, tied up in a beautiful braid hanging down her back, veining. Picture Radharani's intricately decorated crown resting upon her head. Envision Vrishabhanu Nandini's dazzling forehead ornament, which is shaped like a golden leaf. Dwell upon the small curls of hair bordering Radhika's face. Imagine the exquisite tilak design on her forehead. Fix your attention on Radhika's curving, expressive eyebrows. Ponder the gleam of Radha's eyes, which are outlined with dark black kajal. Remember Radhika's ears, beautified with the most charming earrings. Remember Radhika's extraordinary ear ornament that wraps around the back of her ear. Remember the two makaris, which are female makaras, something like dolphins, painted on Radhika's smooth cheeks. The design is painted with musk, kasturi, on her cheeks. Remember Radhika's nose, which is decorated with a pearl ornament hanging in the front and resting on her upper lip in the center of her nose. Remember Radhika's saffron reddish lips and the bright luster of her perfectly formed teeth. Remember Radhika's graceful chin painted with a black dot of musk. Remember her neck, which is marked with three lines. And remember Kishori's many jeweled necklaces hanging down in successive loops. Remember Radhika's gently sloping shoulders. Remember Radhika's arms embellished with different kinds of armlets. Remember Radha's soft elbows, gem-studded bracelets, lotus hands, pinkish palms marked with auspicious symbols and fortune lines. Remember Radharani's soft fingers, decorated with jeweled rings, bearing her own holy name. She wears one ring on her finger that says Radha. Remember her hands, graced by the splendorous beauty of her fingernails. Remember Radhika's breasts, covered by her pinkish, jeweled, embroidered bodice. Remember her favorite locket, which bears a painting or painting of Krishna. So Radharani also has a locket hanging on her chest with a small miniature painting of Krishna done by her sakhi. Chitrasakhi. Remember the fine, lovely hair on her banyan leaf-shaped belly. Remember Radha's lotus navel and slim waist endowed with three folds of skin. Remember Radha's multi-hued blue silk sari, which crosses diagonally over her lower cloth. Remember Radha's two thighs, two knees, two calves, and two ankles. Now dwell upon Radha's ankle bells, which sound like the gentle warbling of swans gliding in a lake. Contemplate Radha's toe rings, which are the birthplace of astonishingly beautiful sounds as she walks along the footpaths of Vrindavan. Visualize Radha's toes and toenails. Oh, listen to me now, my dear mind. Please meditate upon the marks on the sole of Srimati Radhika's left foot. Remember the barley corn at the base of her left big toe, the chakra below that, the umbrella below that, and the bangle below that. Remember the slightly curving upward line which extends from the middle of Radha's left sole to the joint between her big toe and second toe. Remember the eight-petaled lotus flower situated below her middle toes. Remember the flag below the lotus and the creeper below the flower. Remember the elephant goad below Radha's small left toe. Remember the half moon situated on her heel. Situated on the heel of Radha's right foot is a fish. Think about the mountain below her middle toes. Remember the chariot. In the middle of her foot there's a chariot like a rath. And one side of the chariot, on the instep of her foot, which is inside, there's a shakti, missile type of, like a spear type of thing. And remember the club. There's a club on the other side, the outer side of the chariot, or the outer side of her right foot. Remember the conch shell under Radha's big toe. Remember the altar below. There's a homakund below her small toe, and an earring, one jeweled earring below that homakund, below her right small toe. Contemplate the reddish tint of the soles of Radha's lotus feet, extending up to her heels. Picture the toe rings upon her reddish toes. Envision her reddish toenails and imagine her ankle bells. Ponder the soft, supple beauty of her ankles, calves, knees, and thighs. Then remember Radha's beautiful belly and hips. Remember the opulent cloth that she wears around her body, which is interwoven with fine, precious threads of gold. Jari. Remember the jeweled ornament encircling her waist. Remember Radha's navel and the creeper-like series of fine hairs spreading across her leaf-shaped belly. Remember her plump breasts covered by her embroidered and jeweled bodice. Remember her neck endowed with three lines from which hang necklaces of gold and jewel. Remember Radha's softly sloping shoulders and arms decorated with armlets. Remember her charming, lovely elbows and Radha's wrists encircled with bracelets and bangles made of the best gemstones. Remember Radha's reddish lotus hands and soft, slender fingers. Remember her jeweled rings and fingernails, which look like many full moons. Remember Radhika's chin, decorated with little dot of musk. Remember her lotus face, her upper and lower lips, and her two cheeks painted with designs of dolphins. Remember Radha's ears, beautified by unique earrings that have a chain and a pin circling around the back. Remember her nose, decorated with a pearl inlaid with jewels, which hangs directly below her nose from the septum. Remember Radha's wide lotus eyes, outlined with lovely deep black kajal. Remember her long, broadly curved eyebrows and her forehead, which is decorated with precise tilak and a golden leaf-shaped forehead ornament. Remember Radha's charming wavy hair swinging to and fro. Visualize the red vermilion in Kishori's hair part. Picture her crown, which is made of variegated gemstones. Contemplate Radhika's astonishing braid with interwoven clusters of exotic flowers. Her braid, the three parts of her hair braid, look like the Triveni, Ganga, Jamuna, and Saraswati. Fix your attention on the brilliant golden border of cloth covering the forward section of Radha's hair. Now finally, my dear mind, just meditate deeply with the fullest concentration on Srimati Radharani's attractively sweet, gentle smile. These verses describe Radha Madhava's Rupa Chintamani, the transcendental desire-fulfilling touchstone of meditation on their beautiful divine forms. That intelligent, steady, and determined person who reads this composition 2, 3, or 4 times by and firmly applying and absorbing his mind in it will attain the direct darshan of Radha and Krishna without any delay whatsoever. Radha Krishna darshan ki. So this concludes our meditation. This is the Phal Shruti at the end of this short work, Rupa Chintamani, by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. He's saying that someone reads this, intelligent, steady, and determined person who reads this book, or reads this entry here from the book, 2 times, 3 times, or 4 times, firmly applying and absorbing his mind in it, then he will attain direct darshan, saksha darshan, of Radha Krishna. When some devotees engage in this practice of chanting and meditating, they find that they can concentrate on the description of Krishna's beautiful form and Radha's beautiful form. But when they meditate, inwardly meditate and concentrate, they find that their attention to the holy name goes down, and even they're not even chanting properly or missing some mantras. So what to do about this? So the idea is, when we're chanting the holy name, if our mind is fixed on that holy name and chanting nicely, then we keep going. If the mind starts to wander, then we can meditate on this, even if our chanting may be not so attentive. And once our mind, by this meditation on Radha Krishna's forms, maybe concentrating more there and our japa is going, but not so perfectly, then this meditation will pacify the mind and will direct the mind and fix the mind on Krishna. Because you go from nam to rupa, rupa to nam. You can nam, rupa, guna, lila. You go lila, guna, rupa, nam. You can go either way. You can go this way. You enter the lila, then you chant the name. You enter the nam, you enter the lila. You meditate on the name. Now your mind is peaceful. Now you maybe even stop. You can completely stop the meditation if you're not able to balance the two, and then fix on the name. But now your mind is pacified. You've accomplished what you wanted. As a level of Shuddhanam, then the name itself appears as Krishna, a pure name, without extraneous effort. As Prabhupada said, we will see Krishna dancing on our tongue. That means darshan. or sporti, sporti vi sporti, like this. So then, once the mind comes calmed down, peaceful by this meditation, then you can just fix up your mind in Hare Krishna mantra, chanting the mantra. Because you accomplished what you wanted to do. Because your mind is fixed now, it's peaceful. Now absorb yourself in hearing. And try chanting louder. Try chanting more loudly, that's also recommended. But some people, they try every trick in the book, and it doesn't work. So I've introduced a lot of new tricks in this book. Because the general advice that was given previous to this was, if your mind is jumping or disturbed, chant louder. Chant with other chanters, with the more advanced devotees. Or chant with those that are steady in chanting. It's also, this is recommended in Harinam Chintamani, they're left in the top word. Chant with those that have nishtha chanting. You sit with them and chant, and you'll get some nishtha, some steadiness, some encouragement, some strength, determination. Stand up, walk, somehow stay awake and concentrate. But ultimately, most of the time we chant by ourselves, especially grihasthas. They don't have the fortune to chant in association with advanced devotees. And moreover, they may find that many people are chanting together, they can't concentrate. Chanting is generally done in a solitary way. This chanting with an advanced devotee, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur presents, to chant with a very steady person in chanting, that's a recommendation when you can't be steady by yourself. The mostly japa is a solitary performance. It's a japa meditation. So the utmost proper atmosphere, solitary, quiet, peaceful atmosphere, is very conducive as one goes further. In the beginning, one maybe needs the group strength, chanting with a group of devotees, just they carry you through. It's like holding onto a tractor with your bicycle. Hold onto the trolley and then they go down the street and you go very fast without any effort, because their speed carries you along, their energy. So the energy of senior chanters can carry the neophyte along also. That's also helpful. This is a technique to bring us back to a pacified mind so if you meditate on Krishna's form and then you find your mind is, then you just say, okay, thank you, Krishna. I can't remember your form anymore, but I want to dive into your holy name now. That's fine. That's the idea. Yeah, it's transcendental, that's what I said. It's purifying and pacifying for the mind. Just meditating on this form is transcendental. It's purifying. Of course, in terms of which limb of devotion is the most purifying and most powerful to attach us to Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself says in Chaitanya Charitamrita and others, other acharyas also say the most powerful form of the nine limbs, which smaran or meditation is one, is the chanting of Krishna's holy name. That is the shrestha, bhakti yanga shrestha, that's the best of all the limbs. So if you forego chanting to concentrate on meditation, that's of course transcendental, that's bhakti. It's pleasing to the Lord, it's devotional service. It will attach one to the Lord, it will purify one, but not, it won't attach one as much as chanting Hare Krishna. It won't purify one as much as chanting Hare Krishna. So that's why that's recommended. Everything has its relative power. Purna, purnatam, purnatara. The point is, when we're chanting japa, that's a particular service that we're doing. Vibrating the holy name. Shravanam Kirtanam. We're vibrating the holy name so Krishna can hear it, and we can hear it. Chanting with our tongue, and we're hearing with our ears, that's engaging too with the senses, and we're also thinking in our minds. So this is more pleasing to Krishna in one sense, because we're offering more of our senses to Him. Our ears are being offered to Him, our mouth and tongue are being offered to Him, and our mind. And moreover, we're told by our guru to chant a fixed number of rounds every day. Meditation can be a separate seva, separate practice, if one is not able to combine both effectively. to chant and to meditate on the form of the Lord or the pastimes, then one should opt for the required seva of chanting Sankhya Purvakanam, which means our gurus tell us that we should chant the holy name very attentively and hear each syllable of the holy name and offer some prayer to the holy name, or Rani, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in Krishna's service. This basic prayer can go on and on in our mind as we chant. But that's enough to hear and chant, and that, at least for the 2 or 3 hours one chants their 16 rounds, that should be the Shravanam and Kirtanam. If you can't mix meditation to that, then stay fixed. And then if you want to do a separate service of Smaranam or meditation, then that's another service. If you find when you perform meditation or Smaranam that you can't chant properly. And generally, like the Babas of Radhakund, or advanced devotees, they chant. They continue to chant while they do Smaranam, Leela Smaranam, and they meditate on their Mantri Sarup. And they enter the Leela, do service, and so many things are going on, but the holy name is also going on. So they're actually deeply meditating, they enter the Leela. They can be gone for days. Srinivasacharya, we saw that place, Jajigram, the place of the bhajan. And they would sometimes go 2 days to Leela, not come out. Inconceivable type of absorption, Leela pravesh. How do we focus, how do we get the ability to meditate on the form of the Lord and chant the holy name? Keep chanting, then when the name is pure, the form will automatically manifest, along with pastimes. But these different recommendations in the book, the different techniques and suggestions, these are the practice of advanced devotees. They meditate on the form, they chant the name, and all these things come. The form comes, the qualities come, the pastimes. They come along with the holy name. The pure name brings these. So that's for the advanced devotee, and for the neophyte or the practicing beginning devotee, or even intermediate, he's with the name, but form is not coming, qualities are not coming, pastimes are not coming. So these particular descriptions here are simply adjustments to improve the quality of our nam itself, the chanting of our nam. So it's not that the goal is to chant Shuddha Nam, and Shuddha Nam will bring everything by itself. I can't think of an analogy. If you meet a rich man and all your bills are paid, if you go around and try to pay each one, you know, get a job here or there, maybe that would be difficult. So we force meditation on form or qualities or even pastimes. But it's at the level of, because we're not chanting Shuddha Nam, but in pure Nam, then these come without any force. Acharyas do recommend we should practice. It's very good. It's like lifting weights. Use it or lose it. Like we have muscles, and if we don't walk, then they turn into fat. And walking, exercising, it keeps the body in proper shape. So the same way, Prabhupada even said this, because one devotee said, Prabhupada, I have a difficulty memorizing verses. My mind is slow. And Prabhupada said, no, it comes by practice. The mind is like a muscle. If you use it, become strong. We're lazy. We have the muscles, but we don't use them. Like someone says, oh, I have to move this couch to the other side of the room. So when'd you do it? No, it's too much. So we have abilities within ourselves to accomplish a lot of things. But our basic Kali Yuga tamasic orientation and inertia and ignorance, we tend to just say, I can't do it, or I don't want to do it. So this meditation practice, as Prabhupada told us in the beginning of this discussion, he said it's an abhyas. He said it's a practice. In the initial stages, Prabhupada said, the attempt to fix the mind on Krishna may be unsuccessful. But with regulated practice, abhyas yoga, it becomes possible. Like anything, practice makes perfect. So when they first start, wow, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, blowing a fuse on a wire. But then actually it's also very nice. It's very attractive. You really capture the mind. Hey, wait. I get the mind in a headlock. You lock the mind like this and it can't go anywhere. So these meditative techniques are locks. They're mental locks. Manabandha. Manbandha. They lock the mind. Because if the mind is not locked up, God knows where it goes. It goes everywhere and anywhere and somewhere and somehow and all the places. Anyhow. So then to bring it back, and what to do when your mind is running like a wild horse all over creation, and what to do? Well, let's go. Go for a ride. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So no, stop. Stop, mind. Wait a minute. Hey, wait a minute. Hey, take this. You give some occupation to the mind, some engagement. The mind needs engagement. If we don't engage the mind will engage us. And God knows what kind of activities, what kind of thoughts and desires. So better we keep the mind in a headlock, manbandha. Manbandha. Think of Krishna's form. Yes, now. Okay. So the mind surrenders, and you think of Krishna's form. Practice makes perfect. By the way, another day of dry japa, another day of sleepy japa, another day of not into it japa. Another day I have to do it japa. Another day of why do I do it japa? What's the point? The basic point of all our activities is devotion, love. It's a movement of love. We're moving for Krishna's love. Because we're trying to love Krishna, we're trying to act like lovers of Krishna. We're not lovers of Krishna, we don't have love for Krishna. So it's an act. It's an act of devotion. If you play the part long enough and hard enough, after a while you identify with the character you're playing. You say, wow, I'm Arjuna. Because you've been shooting the Mahabharata for 2 years. So after a while you think you're Arjuna. But this is a little different, this analogy, because the process of bhakti actually reveals the individual spiritual persona. That I am a lover of Krishna. That is my eternal identity. And Krishna is my eternal lover. That one comes to realize as a byproduct and culmination of devotional acts. Acts of a devotion. Acting like a lover. How do lovers act? They act solely, lovers act solely and wholly for the pleasure of the beloved. So this is what bhakti means. To act for Krishna, to serve Krishna, think of Krishna, speak of Krishna. So every act of devotion, whether it's fasting on Ekadasi, whether it's chanting Krishna's name, whether it's offering food to Krishna, whether it's preaching, distributing books, whether it's addressing deities, whether it's serving deities, it's all about loving expression. It's all about loving Krishna. These are acts of devotion. We're acting like lovers, as is what lovers do. They do all kinds of things, and all kinds of actions, and speak all kinds of words, and do all kinds of things to please their beloved. So Krishna is the beloved of everyone. Every man, woman, child, animal, bird, beast, dog, cat. Krishna is the reservoir of love. The objective of everyone's attention and love. So that's the why when we have the why chant japa, why worship deities, why offer our food, why do anything? Why put on tilak, why wear neck beads, why anything? And this is the answer. Anukalyena Krishna Shivanam Bhakti Uttaram. Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavitam. Anukalyena Krishna Shivanam Bhakti Uttaram. This is Uttam Bhakti, this is topmost loving expression. Para prem, para bhakti. A topmost expression of devotion and love. There's no covering, there's no separate motive, there's no ulterior purposes. It says, Anya vilashya shunyam. Gyan karm anavritam. Avritam. Avritam means covering. Anavritam means devoid of covering, exposed, pure, unadulterated, free from any covering or contamination. There's no karma there. Love. There's no endless pure love, Krishna's love. There's no speculation or doubts, or mental speculation, doubting. It's a clear, transparent relationship. The lover is sure of his beloved, and the beloved is sure of the lover. Absolutely sure. Because the Ashraya is absolutely dedicated to the Vishaya. The Prema Shraya devotee is dedicated fully and completely to the Prem Vishaya Sri Krishna. And that bondage of love is so intimate and so confidential and so tight that there's nothing in the world that can sever it. It's called Bhagwan Bhakta Prem Sambandha. It's complete, absolute, unbreakable. Achyuta. Achyuta Prem. So practice is meditation. And judge a thing by its results. As Prabhupada often said, phalyam payajiyate. Judge, what is the fruit, the fall? What fruit? You do this, and what fruit do you get? You get something tasty? You get something valuable? You get something tangible? Is it meaningful in your life? Does it improve you? Then continue. If it doesn't, then desist, stop. One acharya, he went overseas and he was preaching, one sannyasi. He's introducing some new ideas, some deeper concepts of devotional service. And some devotees, they were asking, they were saying, oh, you never heard this, we've never heard this before. This is some unique presentation, we're not familiar with this. We don't seem to see this in Prabhupada's books or whatever. So the sannyasi replied, he said, I am trying to give you some deeper understanding, some more understanding of this Krishna consciousness. I brought something to give to you. If you like what I'm giving, then you keep it. And if you don't like, then you give it back. You give it back, I'll take it with me elsewhere. Because there was some complaint about what he was giving. He said, alright, I'm trying to present something valuable, something helpful for all of you. Maybe something new or a little new packaging. If you like it, you keep it. You keep it for yours benefit. But if you don't like it, give back to me. Very sweet explanation. So that concludes chapter 14 of the Art of Chanting. Jai Jai Shri Radhe, Jai Jai Shri Radhe, Jai Jai Shri Radhe.